You told me that you finally caught up with the most talked about movie from last year, Joker.
The Michael and Us podcast, folks, as you know, always topical. We're watching movies from the 20s. We're watching, Red Scare movies from the 50s. And so, yeah, always at the cutting edge of the zeitgeist. I finally got around to watching Joker in quarantine. It was one of those things my girlfriend and I had talked about watching just over and over again for months. And then, I don't know, it always kind of got pushed kind of to second in the queue, So we finally got around to it. And yeah, I liked it. It's
Yeah, good.
kind of anticlimactic to just say, yeah, it was good. I mean, I think I probably enjoyed it more having watched it outside of the kind of moment when everyone was talking about it. I do think I have a similar beef with it, albeit a somewhat friendlier version of it that I do with kind of all blockbusters these days, which is after watching it, I just thought, why did this have to be like a DC movie? Like, this is just a movie. I guess I'm not that invested in the Joker mythos and in needing to have things explained. And solely on those terms, the movie would have annoyed me. Like, if that was the point of the movie, we're filling in the holes in the Joker's biography. How did he get this way? Kind of taken in those terms, movie doesn't need to exist. But since the movie also happens to be an incredible document of a person's, mental illness and more importantly, the material conditions surrounding it, it's very good. And I really enjoyed it. Joaquin Phoenix is incredible.
Robert De Niro less so playing a talk show host, I thought.
But I
Didn't he
mean,
sound a bit like Rupert Pupkin when he was doing his jokes?
I did think that, and I thought that might be kind of intentional almost. It sort of works that like De Niro's performance feels a bit phoned in and washed up because I sort of think that, it's fun to imagine that the character he's playing is just lazy and washed up, sort of like Jerry Lewis is in King of Comedy, right? Like, and yet he just is the beneficiary of fame anyway. He lives just a frictionless life of comfort where he gets to laugh at the little people, and he's like not even trying. He's like barely even entertaining, and yet he still has a show that millions of people watch every night.
Yeah, because the TV tells them that he's a legend. Look, I have nothing to say about Joker because I think it's irresponsible to talk about. It's
Okay,
dangerous.
that was the funnest thing about watching it is watching it and thinking like, this is what people were scared of. This is what prompted grown adults writing articles that are like, here's why I'm not ever going to see the new Joker movie and why you shouldn't either. Ridiculous. And also why apparently some of the libs who saw it, thought that it was like dangerous and that it was going to make people do crime.
Well, you remember how like everybody was saying it was the incel movie, the
It's
incel
barely okay.
Joker?
First of all, it's
Doesn't lean into that at all.
barely about that, but also in his own kind of fevered delirium or whatever, he has sex, so it doesn't even make sense.
But to your earlier point about how sad it is that a movie like this has to be a Batman movie, I'm starting to feel a little bit more generous towards it and think that that's like the movie is a piece of conceptual art where like that's the thesis. Like you watch it and you think, yes, this is the only way it could be made. And like that's the ultimate joke.
I'm not sure that Todd Phillips of Road Trip and Starsky and Hutch really had that in mind when he wrote and directed this,
Well, a patron saint of the podcast, Michael Moore, compared him to no less than Stanley Kubrick on his own podcast. So, I mean, that's an artist who certainly thought things through and had a grand vision.
On the theme of blockbusters, since we're flying fast and loose this week, last night I revisited Mad Max Fury Road, which is a film I think I've alluded to on the show before, and is one that I think might actually be one of the. O I mean, I'll say hyperbolically that it is the only good modern blockbuster. I mean, I'm sure there are.
I don't know if I would agree with that. I think some of the Mission Impossibles are pretty good.
I said hyperbolically, but I mean, of this ilk of sort of extremely big budget pyrotechnic movies that are just like one long wailing guitar solo of cinematography and special effects, this is the one that to me most feels like a real movie. It's the one that feels like it has
A vision.
Vision and a thesis without being overly kind of didactic or cloying about it. It's a movie that which erects a pretty elaborate mythos, although it's one that, again, it does without very much work or without much heavy-handedness. It largely infers it. It's a movie that has very little, if anything, to do with, you know, Mad Max of the, you know, Mel Gibson era. It's just kind of loosely based on it in that it's set in a kind of apocalyptic tundra, you know, after like some kind of nuclear catastrophe, nuclear war, where kind of nomads and kind of neo-feudal sort of neo-dark age societies kind of compete for, you know, scraps of resources and stuff. Beyond that, it's got
is it set in the year 2020 in America?
can we get like a buzzer or something for that? So it has very little to do with you know, it's got nothing to do narratively with the original kind of Mel Gibson era Mad Max. And the Mad Max character played by Tom Hardy is really secondary to it. The, you know, Charlize Theron is really the most important character in the movie. And there's not a lot of dialogue for a movie like this. So much of the film is action, and yet there's so much that you can infer from the dialogue that does exist. About what this world is, how it came to be, what the stakes of everything are. And I feel like a lot of movies today, I mean, Marvel and DC movies especially, are very interested in having kind of an elaborate mythos, but they're obsessed with over-explaining it. You know, everything has to be documented in kind of encyclopedic, magisterial fashion, and you have to be beaten over the head with it. This movie doesn't do that. You know, Christopher Nolan, who's one of the biggest blockbuster directors today, almost every one of his movies begins with like an hour of explanation for like whatever elaborate system he has to create, you know, to explain how the world works in Inception or Interstellar. I don't know when the last time you saw Mad Max Fury Road was, but it's a movie that I can unironically say I really enjoy and think is quite good. And that is not something that I can say for many movies these days with its budget.
I mean, I saw it twice in a theater, but I haven't seen it since then. I mean, I agree with everything you say.
This reminds me that a movie we really badly need to do at some point is Avatar, which is a movie I saw only once. And I feel like it's come up before and we haven't done it because it's elicited the reaction that you just gave, I think, from both of us on more than one occasion. Sitting through Avatar would be such a fucking chore, but it is such, I feel like it would be such.
Well, also watching it at home would rob it of whatever charm it had.
That's the only way I've seen it, because I didn't see it in the theater. You know, yeah, it's such an underwhelming experience at home, but it is also such a funny phenomenon because it is a movie that is, I can't remember who pointed this out first, a lot of people probably pointed it out, but it will never stop being funny that the highest budget, certainly one of the highest grossing movies, you know, of all time,
for a long time the record holder,
yeah,
yes,
is a movie that, you know, just several years on, nobody can remember really any significant plot details of. You might remember like the dumbest things about it, like the fact that the precious resource they're all fighting over in a galaxy far, far away is literally called unobtainium. Those are the only things I remember about it, certainly.
I wonder, because that movie was so popular all around the world, I wonder if, like, maybe in China or in India, they still have Avatar Mania, and that will sustain the sequels.
I would be interested to learn that it had a second life, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens with the, you know, gazillions. I mean, how many sequels have they commissioned again? It's like a ludicrous amount.
It's something like four. I think there are
It might even be more than that. And I mean, they're doing that sort of Star Wars thing of like, it's not even clear exactly what they are. It's just that because you don't plan films anymore around like what they're going to be. You plan them as like cultural events that you're trying to create in advance. So it's more just like we're saving this big slot for Avatar 7, Avatar Takes Manhattan or whatever. But it'll be really interesting to see when the next one comes out, if anyone even cares, or if these movies kind of go the way of like those. Do you remember those Narnia, the attempt to restart the Narnia thing at the height of sort of
I do.
Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter mania, and they didn't get beyond like one or two movies.
I'm rooting for the Avatar sequels because it's, you know, like part of a dying breed, which is like hubristic auteur excess. You know, it's just him and Christopher Nolan are the only two who are like totally insane, recklessly irresponsible guys who are just like burning, you know, burning money by the ton.
You know what I like about those guys is that on some level, and Abrams too, like on some level, these are the only ones who actually, they're like of a dying breed of guys that actually believe in this. Whereas like the next generation, like know that the kind of know these movies suck, I think, or like they're so kind of, they've retreated so much.
Well, the next generation are careerists, basically. The next generation after that are people who, like, have one movie at Sundance, and then they get picked by Steven Spielberg to direct a Jurassic World sequel because, like, they're pliable and they can be easily pushed around. And then they direct that because it's the right career move. Whereas, yeah, Nolan thinks he's kind of working in the tradition of Kubrick. Have you followed, by the way, you know, for the last 3 months, Nolan has kept apparently trying to get his movie released, like, during the pandemic. He's for a long time wanted to be the guy who, like, he's had a release date in July, and he wanted that movie to be the movie that brings everybody back to the theaters.
What is the movie?
It's called Tenet. It's like a time travel
film. It's a remake of Roman Polanski's The Tenant, yeah, starring the director himself.
With Polanski reprising his role, incredibly. a bit of a risk, but a bold strategy.
But so Nolan has not been able to get this movie out, I take it.
Well, I mean, probably at this point not. I think it's been taken off the release calendar. But, like, he wanted to be the guy who brings everybody back out, you know. And there's something about that, you know, a strong-willed director who is going to risk half his audience dying of the coronavirus so that they could experience those beige, dimly lit images, you know, on the big screen where they belong. Those scenes of people in suits walking through office buildings that are his specialty.
To me, the political analogs to Christopher Nolan and J.J. Abrams and James Cameron are like, you know, they're like Blairites in the 1990s. They're people that are retreating from the grand vision that came before them, but think that they're still doing the Lord's work and that actually they're not really breaking with it. They're just updating it for, like, the modern world. But then the next generation of those guys were just, like, the most totally cynical people who'd never known any kind of, like, political struggle, and they'd never had to do any political heavy lifting at all. And, you know, yeah, a lot of them were just, like, the most useless careerists. And I imagine that the people making, you know, the people who will make, you know, the 15th, you know, Avatar spinoff or whatever, you know, some of whom probably haven't even been born yet, you know, they'll tell themselves that they're doing something important, but, like, actually they'll know, and they will just be like, you know, like the neo-Blairite backbenchers, you know, a few of whom are still on the labor bench today. They will just be totally defeated people who have no imagination at all and just want to make money.